Hi friends, it's Brittany. Before we dive into today's episode, I have a quick ask for you. I need your help. I'm doing a short listener survey to get to know you a little bit better. Who's tuning in? What do you love? And how I can keep Conscious Pathways fresh, meaningful, and aligned with what you need. It won't take more than 5 minutes, and your feedback means so much to me. It helps me grow and helps this podcast to grow with you. You'll find the link in the show notes, and I would be so grateful if you took a moment to share your thoughts. Thanks for being here. Thanks for listening. And now let's get into the episode. Hi, and welcome to Conscious Pathways, the podcast where we explore the intersection of education and social justice through transformative conversations. I'm your host, Brittany. In today's episode, I sit down with the truly inspiring, deeply brilliant Dr. Erica McDowell. She's an educator, an advocate, an equity steward whose work is grounded in legacy and liberation. Dr. McDowell takes us on a journey through her experience as a teacher, a leader, and a community builder. She speaks very candidly on the systemic oppression that Black educators and communities continue to face, and how initiatives like the Black Wildflowers Fund are working to change that by providing critical resources and collective support. And together we reimagine what education can look like when it's rooted in freedom, equity, and empowerment, and not just for the students, but for the educators who serve them. So whether you're a teacher, a parent, or you're simply just social justice curious, this is the episode for you. You're going to walk away from this conversation feeling renowned and ready to take on the world. I am so excited to share this episode with you. So let's dive into it. Hello and welcome to Conscious Pathways. Today, I am joined by the fabulous Dr. Erica McDowell. Thank you so much for joining me.
Well, thank you for having me. It's always a great opportunity to come and share space. And I wish the listeners could hear all the conversations that we've been having. And I'm just excited. Like, this is that's part of my day today.
Yes. I feel like sometimes I pop in and usually I don't know the guests. I don't know if people know that, but usually I'm just talking to a random person. I don't know. I like your vibes. Let's go. But the second we popped on, you're like, what's up? And I was like, ooh, this is going to be fun.
Yes. Yes.
We're about to vibe.
Yes. Because that's what we all need right now.
Yes. Right now, especially, I am here for vibes. I am here for fun. I'm here for good times. So. And that's what we're about to have right now. But can you tell me a little bit about how you got started in education and what inspired you to want to be an advocate for education?
Well, I am a legacy educator. I'm so happy to say that my dad is a retired teacher of Patterson Public Schools. He was an art teacher. We looked just alike. So I'm used to being stalked in grocery stores saying, you're my girl. We did great. My grandpa's also, I have a legacy community leaders. My grandpa was one of the first Black businesses in Patterson, New Jersey. And you can see him on like the movie Barbershop, like the first running credits. He's in the Library of Congress, rest his soul. And so I've been taught early on. My mom started out as an ECE teacher. Actually, that's where my parents met. My dad was running the summer camp and my mom was waiting for children to get picked up. And a year later, they were married. And 9 months after that, I was born. And so I tell people like my work started before birth, with my parents really giving into the city that we were in any way possible. And so growing up, I'm going to tell you, I did not want to be a teacher. Not that it wasn't a great thing. I went to Rosa Parks School of Fine and Performing Arts. Shout out, right? Yes, that's some strong strength to have your high school named after that. I was a drama major, vocal minor. I had pursuits for Hollywood. And my first summer job was teaching drama in almost, I think it was 3 rooms. And it was a drama teacher, a vocal teacher, and a music teacher. And that summer changed my life. And so I started looking around to say, like, how can I do this thing called theater education? Something that I didn't see except for my dear drama director, George Duraney. And so I got into the field, went to Howard, HU, you know, to all my folks on the line. And because they were an HBCU who had a degree major at the time, which is not there anymore, of theater education. So I split my time between Chadwick Boseman School of the Arts and the School of Education, right? Did my student teaching at Duke Ellington School of the Arts in DC. And I just kept going. So I went back home, start teaching. And that's where I fell in love and I never left. You can't let me go now. I'm going to be 40 in July. And so when people are like, usually people are looking for this epiphany. I'm like, I've been around educators and community folks my whole life. This is just the natural assurance of what I have to do in my ancestral giving and like what we want schools to look in. I'll show you something. I just turned my eye. This is what I look at every day. The power of education. And I'll read it. Even in the midst of our worst struggles, our forefathers knew that part of our advancement and growth began with a sound education. So that's how I got into, because my parents instilled that in me, and I'm trying to keep that moving for everybody that I touch or in my atmosphere.
That is the most beautiful thing. I love and adore every aspect of that, especially calling yourself a legacy educator, because that is so powerful.
And we have to say that more and be proud, because if we know between 81 and 85% of the teaching population is white and female. And I think sometimes I remember now, even though I didn't want to be an educator, everybody wanted to be a teacher. I remember people running in the supermarket, in the grocery store. My dad's actually still a full-time pastor, right? And people are just like, hey, and we're not showing those narratives. We're not telling people that we've been doing this work. This is not new. It's just that we've been on the margins, and I'm here to dismantle that system of oppression. We've been here. Yeah. We are doing the work, and I'm going to continue on that legacy, period. Yeah.
Period. Period. I was reading this book, and one of those really powerful things that I heard and read, because a lot of my education, most of my teachers were white and female. They had a small handful of teachers who had one Black woman teacher and one Black male teacher. And that was the only thing I had all throughout K through 12. And that is unfortunately a pretty normal experience for most of us, right? And to hear that, you know, after, you know, Brown versus Board of Education, we had Black educators, we had Black principals, we had Black educators, we had purely Black schools, right? Like we had to, we didn't have a choice, right? But we had to educate the babies. And then after Brown versus Board of Education, great, now we're getting integrated schools, now we're doing the thing. But all of those Black educators, those Black principals, those Black teachers, those Black administrators, right? Suddenly they couldn't keep their jobs. They got pushed out of the thing that they've been doing for years, teaching this population of students that they've been teaching for years, right? And when I heard that, my heart sank, because I was like, no, we were out here. We literally got pushed out of this field. What do you mean?
What do you mean? And I think it's funny, you're dancing all in my dissertation. Shout out to Drexel University, where I earned my doctorate of education.
Yes.
And I talk about that landmark decision and how, in theory, yes, we should be. But I think at the end of the day, we still have less than 2% of men that are educators. My dad is like a dying breed. And I think also we have to change the narratives for our young folks that we have, we will, and we will continue. And so like even these conversations that we're having, like when I first talk about that legislation, again, I taught educational leadership and policy, right? And so some of these things that we're going through today are not new to us. And so how do we come together in community as educators and say, this is what we're going to do? I think that's part of the reason why I'm a fundraiser, philanthropist, and teacher and have a million jobs, because it's like, we can do this, but do we have the capital and do we have the community in which to resist what has been told to us that might be false?
Mm, yes, yes, yes. And that's actually a beautiful segue into the work that that Black Wildflowers Fund is doing. That's really what initially caught my eye, is that, like you said, we're out here, right? And especially in early education has probably the highest representation of women of color in this field. And especially when we go into like business ownership, right? Again, we out here, we're doing things, but do we have the funds? Do we have the capital? Do we have the backing? This work is more important than ever, especially when we think about family run and home childcare providers, right? They're providing an incredible service for the community. And they often offer hours that are a little bit different than the traditional hours, because that's what the community needs. And it's disheartening to see that these educators and these entrepreneurs, right, especially here in California, they're closing down their businesses, especially with the implementation of TK. They don't have the kids,
right?
And so they're closing their doors, and the community is losing these institutions that are so incredibly important for community. And so the work that you're doing with Black Wildflowers Fund, can you tell me a little bit more about that and, you know, the origins of this work?
You basically answered the origins. So I'm going to just go there.
Fair enough.
I have seen. We have built a co-CEO model, so I do not stand alone. My co-CEO, Maia Blankenship, shout out, thriving in D.C. with her little one. We were working, and we still are working, at Wildflower School. So it's a beautiful ecosystem of small liberatory Montessori schools. I'm energizing New Jersey. She's energizing D.C. And I remember joining Wildflower, and we used to meet as Black people. Like, we had, let's all meet. all of these things. And what we started to realize was the path for people who identify as Black is not the same for people who identify as white. And that is not just racially, mostly socioeconomically. So the startup cost and the funds to not only open your school is different because your community tax dollars are higher. There's a lot of things that people don't understand. So let's talk about redlining, right? Like some of us have just inherited redlining policies that haven't been healed and restored. So we're in these meetings, we're talking, and I never forget, Maia looked at me, and I'm going to be very transparent. I am on a beautiful health soft journey. I want a soft life. I work part-time and have a million part-time jobs, but I know what my body needs. And we said, we have to do something. And she said, but I'm not doing it alone. And I was like, I'm there. And at the time, I was a professor at Buffalo working part-time and doing that. So March 2023, we found inaugural funders. We're like, we doing it. We're on. So we had a launch adjacent to the American Montessori Society conference that year. And from that, we have main programming. So you see, I'm talking about capital. First thing we wanted to do was give grants to schools who were starting out. And one of our missions is to dismantle systems of oppression, but also live in abundance, right? And so we've been able to get out over hundreds of thousands of dollars. And y'all can go on our website. And one school got $80,000 above and beyond what they needed to start. Because one thing I've noticed when I'm helping folks open schools, what is the path to sustainability? So I think we all got great ideas, but like, how are we making sure we're adequately paid? You talked about ECE and most Black people, you know, most folks are in there. They're also the lowest paid and under the poverty line. How do we dismantle that? So we also talk about our Ignite grants. I've been a school teacher and principal. I am very proud to help somebody buy a washer and dryer. I'm very happy to help somebody rebuild a playground to make it accessible. And so we do that. And the beautiful part is that we curated something called the Black Teacher Council. And it is a council of seasoned leaders, 3 to 4 people who get on a line and we take a step back and say, look at what your community's asking you. How can we fulfill it? And so we're also dismantling that system that educators can't fundraise. So all of our folks have an inside track. And so we also have a community of a practice. We call it the Exchange. So this is our second year. We did it in Philly. We started in DC. And can I tell you, someone said, it's an unconference that I love so much and I always want to get invited to. So we invite all of our grantees and we charge you nothing. I pay for your flight, your hotel, your food. We have fried fish, chicken, deviled eggs. We have a family dinner. We come and have workshops. We work with Candace Fletcher at the National Center. Tiffany Quivers, great person, filled our cups. And so we also have exchange moments. So we had our Black Men United exchanging. And then last but certainly not least, Dr. E carries 6-figure debt to the point where I can't access capital to buy a house because my debt to income ratio sucks. Anybody else on the line going through that? And so what we do, and I'm so proud of this, our credential grant program, I think we're over 700,000 at this point, but I got to check the number on that. But allowing people who identify as Black to choose where you want to go. I'm not going to tell you where to go. Is it accredited? Just so I could pay that bill. Go to a training center where you feel centered and hold, and we write that check in full. You don't get a bill for your tuition. And I love folks who are doing the work, like, I'll give you 100. I'll give you this. No, I'm going to pay whatever they charged you for tuition. That's what we're going to pay. So in the next couple days, we will be announcing our 2025 credential grantee winners. And all of those people come together yearly. We have fireside chats, Montessori on Wheels, CEO to Tenda Blessing, Manchuri. So we bring people together to have these conversations because Bell Hooks says, and I'm going to end here because I could talk about Black wildflowers all day. Bell Hooks talks about one of the most vital ways we sustain community is building communities of resistance, places we know we're not alone. And one of the things that Maia have and I have in our lived experience is that we are trying to orchestrate places where we don't feel alone. And so how do we replicate that for educators so we can dismantle what I went through, what she's gone through, and her as a single mother in DC, that she can send her child somewhere where teachers look like her, right? And so that's Black Wildflowers Fund. And we're trying to do everything and anything. But honestly, the heart of our work is to dismantle those systems of oppression and live in abundance for our callings as educators who identify as Black. And that does not mean as somebody and people says, well, the Black Wildflowers Fund, isn't that marginalization? And they're shocked when We've given out tons of awards to my sisters in Puerto Rico. We have to stop limiting ourselves in our own community to say, that's not my job to police your identification. You come, you tell me you identify as Black. And so I'm excited about the schools, the grantees we've given in Puerto Rico. And so how can we really be a whole community and give folks what they need? That's Black Wildflowers.
Yeah. That's the ad right there.
Boom! Donate!
Dusted. We did it. Because at so much of what you just said at the heart of that is community, right? And it's evident in the practices, and it's evident in the work that you're doing, that you have listened to what the community has consistently said. What are the problems? What is going on, right? Because sometimes in advocacy, people think like, I'm going to use my voice to speak for others and I'm going to do this and blah, blah, blah. And it's like, actually, advocacy has nothing to do with you.
Nothing. You are decensored, baby.
Yeah. It has nothing to do with you. It has everything to do with us, everything to do with we, and listening to communities and listening to what communities need and want. There's a beautiful quote, and I'm forgetting this, Liliana, I'm forgetting her last name, but she's an Aboriginal activist. And she says, you know, if you have come to help me,
you wasted your time.
You wasted your time.
If you've come because your liberation is bound up with mine, let's work together. Lila Watson, and she attributed to the Aboriginal community. And don't play with me. Hey, I thought I was in my daddy church. Woo, that's it, sis.
The congregation is coming up.
Come on. Look, sometimes people are like, oh, I said, look, I try to warn y'all. I got a little churchy in me, but I still got something to say. And so, yes, we are bound to each other. And can I tell you, and when I teach, right? So I'm also, you know, a professor. I do professional developments. I just got off a plane from Maine and I had a ball. Mm. Shout out to my folks in Maine. That when I get up, I actually say, can someone grab my hand who's comfortable? And I said, if our liberation is really entwined, you gonna move where I move. And so when you talk about advocacy, one of the things that people didn't knock us for it, but we were like, let's pause before we build. We went on a world tour, Puerto Rico, California, Ohio. Arkansas. We have branded somebody in Arkansas. There's a Black sister, hey, Ariana, who is doing that work out there, right? And we said, what do you need? We don't know everything. What I know is my lived experience working with you. And our elders who serve on the teacher council was like, I wish there was a Black Wildflowers Fund when I opened my school. And do you know how that breaks my heart? Because yes, but these sisters could have been a little, and I want to shout out my brothers too. We got some brothers in the line, right? And so how do we do that? And how do we continue this conversation where it's liberatory for all of us? Like, we just don't keep talking about it.
Yeah.
Because guess what? My elementary school's closed down.
Wow.
In Patterson, New Jersey, Reverend Fred H. Lagarde opened up Patterson Come Unity Christian Schools, one of the first Black-owned schools in Passaic County, New Jersey, and it is not open. And he schooled pre-K all the way to eighth grade, and I was there every year of my life during that time. And I wouldn't be the Rosa Parks grad, the Howard grad, the NYU grad, the Drexel grad, without the community schools. And this Black man saying he was the first man to bring Martin Luther King to Patterson, New Jersey. And so I want to tell these songs of, moreover, when I say I'm a legacy educator, I got a lot of stuff in me that I can't see another school close, Brittany. I can't. Like, it's not going to work. It's not going to work. Because here's the thing, people having babies, it ain't a lack of children. So yeah. What is it?
Yeah. And I can only speak for California, but I know that we consistently have that childcare crisis, really. It's a crisis. And it's about access. What can families access? And we're trying to do all kinds of things within California in terms of like rate reform and vouchers and all these different things. But still, schools are closing their doors because they just can't afford to operate. Schools are closing their doors because there's just all these different, you know, rules, regulations, finances, things that come up.
Parents can't afford it.
Parents can't afford it. The schools can't afford it. You know, in California, we had this bill come out from the fire agency, right? Which is great, right? We want schools to be safe, right? But what they wanted schools to do was to implement these fire alarms in their schools that would cost them hundreds of thousands of dollars to implement into their schools. And the schools are like, with what money? Like, we want to do this, but like, make it make sense. The math is not mathing.
And I think a lot of times when people talk to me about Black Wildflowers Fund, and I just want to shout out, we're a part of EDLOC, Educational Leaders of Color. And people keep telling me like, well, why would you do that? I said, because what world are we preparing for, the one we lived in or the one that the children are going to live in? And I think when we think about, and people know this, and I'll tell people on the line, I'm not a birther. I'll be 40 in July. I've been working with kids my whole life. So if I am saying, I could imagine, and I think when people talk about sacrifice, I think about my mom and dad could have opened up a beautiful community school. I'm telling you, my mom's a retired postal worker too, baby. Okay. Everybody know my mama in Patterson, right? But we didn't have access to capital. But it seems like in our country, and I'm just talking about the system of education, we give least to the most vulnerable. And so when people say, why Black wildflowers? That's why. I think every child should be able to go to a school where they are safe and not just from programs or we did this, right? Can I be honest with you? Let's use your example. If someone said, we're having a safety issue, it takes this amount of money. Can we look at those funds and look at the whole child in the whole school and see not just via alarms? I remember that bear, Smokey the Bear, and you better not, and fall fires. Where's the teaching going on? Like, I'm a behaviorist. What is the root cause? Why do you need to spend that much money on fires? That's right. And so I think we have to keep having these conversations of, what are we investing? And I contend that we should invest in people, communities, and dismantle systems of oppression that don't benefit them.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it's like that idea, right? You work in community health and you keep getting, you know, your patients and they keep coming to you sick. They keep coming to you sick. They keep coming to you sick. And they're all drinking from that same well. You could prescribe them all the same thing. You could be like, oh, here's some medication to help you get better. But they keep getting sick. At what point do we stop to look at, like, what's in the well? What's making them sick? What is beyond what we can see? Because it always goes back to a system. It always goes back to a pattern. It always goes back. Like, we have to look at our history. We have to know where we came from to know where we are, to know where we're going. And all of these things are so important. They're so, so, so important.
Can I give your listeners a little tidbit? Because it's you. I'm like, can I tell y'all I'm having the best time of my life? I said that 3 times. Okay. Dr. Ron Whitaker, he has something called the HELP framework. And I'll give that to everybody. And you just hit on it. I think sometimes we talk about what do we do. He gives us a great framework on history, equity versus equality, love. He contends that love is always there, and pedagogy and practices, right? And so when I'm talking to people and they're like, where do I start? Start with the HELP framework. Like, what is our history here? And so I think sometimes when I'm helping people think about opening schools in their community, you also don't want to recreate wheels of oppression. Again, I'm still trying to open up a Montessori school in Patterson, New Jersey. Can I tell you what I roll with? We got a history of schools opening and closing, right? Mm-hmm. We have a history of students in Patterson, New Jersey, not giving what they need. Why did my dad, as a public school teacher, take a lot of his salary to pay for 2 little girls to go to private school? My daddy was a teacher. We weren't rich. And so I think when we talk about history, we talk about equality. I remember the school I went to, I started stuttering in 3rd grade. And again, my dad and my parents are community folks. Literally, a trailer was built and I had a speech pathologist. I didn't stutter after that year. And so when we get to know communities and know people and meet people where they are, I think we have an opportunity. But what I'm noticing is that we're all isolated and not having these conversations together. So when I'm going into rooms with folks and saying, I don't come alone. I feel like I don't come alone. So the decision of you supporting Black wildflowers is not just connected to me. It's connected to everybody I serve. And I think we have to really think about community and history and how we leverage those things as moments of opportunity that our ancestors gave us.
Yes, 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 yes. They are moments of opportunity.
Moments of opportunity.
Yes, so empowering. And I'm always saying these things, right? Like, if you look at the history, right? You looked at the systems of oppression and how oppression can become internalized and all these different things. And, you know, the idea is like, oh, well, like, people, they don't want to start their own business. They don't want to be in education. You know, like, I try to shift things in the classroom and they don't want to learn. It's like, well, yeah, because over time, over the history of it, they have been told time after time after time after time that they're not good enough. They're not going to amount to anything. They're not smart enough. They've been told this. So you can't just walk in there one day and just say, like, okay, you can do this now. And they immediately believe you, right? Because that's how systems of oppression work, right?
That's what trauma looks like in real time. People want to talk about trauma-informed practices. Here's the thing. Stop saying you want a teacher, but don't want to pay them adequately. Let's dance. I'm confused. You love me? Pay me, right? And then here's the thing, right? And people are like, oh, well, Paulo Freire, and I think Pedagogy of the Oppressed. If you ain't read that book, you need to read that book. Look, come on. That red book, get it read. Okay?
Yeah.
Education is not only an act of love, but it's also an act of courage. And I think you just hit upon something that people talk about, disproportionate education, kids not getting what they need. But guess where those kids go to get the surplus? Their community. I was reading a book in a party in Alabama because I remember my grandpa said, you said you're going to finish that book. And those little things. And he had a sixth grade education and he opened a business. And so I think also, and I'm going to dance here too, I am a proud Black woman, but I think we also have to teach folks how the structures and systems have not always benefited us. And I talk to people a lot about, do you know the origins of education just in America? They're like, oh yeah, everybody. No, let me dance. It is built on an industrial complex with Rockefeller and a whole bunch of other people to get more workers. Clearly, we're not an industrial complex anymore, but has our ethos of education shifted? And so you mean to tell me why aren't teachers thriving? We're in the 21st century and you still got seats lined up. And so I think we have to start really unearthing things and unearthing them in love, because I think also people say all the time, Dr. E got a real diverse set of friends. Oh, you just trying to say they're culturally and linguistically diverse and reflect the communities in which I live and serve? That's what you're trying to tell me. And so what is wrong with that? I remember this story, being a professor at Buffalo, ushering our master's and doctoral level students. And I was one of the first Black professors some of my folks had. And when you look at the results, because, you know, they always observe you, and they were like, my life has changed just by being in. And so I tell people all of that, bringing more diversity into not only our work or our schools benefits us all, because then we're all co-creating a history that is accurate. But I'm going to stop right there because I'm dancing on some stuff currently. But if we get together, I don't think you can rewrite a history if I'm here writing it with you. Get at the table, y'all. Get at the table. I don't know what to grump the school board. I don't know what you need to do.
You get out there. That reminds me of a story. So I went to study abroad in South Africa. And yes, it was the best experience. 10 out of 10. I want to go back. Take me back. Take me back to the motherland. And that experience changed my life. And I remember we were touring one of the political prisons, Robben Island. And our tour guide, who was, you know, taking us around, he was telling us how he was a political prisoner there. And he was telling us all of these stories. And he was showing, he's like, yeah, this was my cell. This is, you know, I saw, you know, some of my friends, you know, die here. I saw this. And he was telling us these stories. And I remember thinking the whole time, like, why would you want to come back? You know, you got out. Why would you want to come back? Why would you want to? I kept thinking that. And he was like, yeah, people ask me this all the time. And he says that if I let outsiders tell our stories, I need to be there to tell, like, we need to tell our stories. We need to make sure that we are telling our stories and getting that out there. Like, that is my job. That is my role. That is my purpose here. And I was like, I'm thinking about this all wrong. And that shifted my thinking, right? Like, we need to be there to tell our stories. We need to elevate our stories. Like, if we're not talking about them, they're going to fizzle out. They're going to die. And we don't want that. Our stories are important. Our stories are powerful. Our stories are how we learn, how we grow, right? Again, we can't know where we're going if we don't know where we've been. It's so important that our stories are told, that they are heard, that they're elevated.
That's the thing too. You dancing. No, because I'm going to take it down. I'm going to catch the mantle.
Okay.
If we don't, where's the next Erica and Brittany? Let's just dance with it. Like,
okay.
If we don't, who is coming? I think about my goddaughter. I'm looking at my pictures, Katalia Riley, right? And a lot of my work is in, she's my goddaughter. She's 4. She was just over here eating spaghetti. And she told me she loved me this week. And people were like, oh, she thrives on the autism spectrum. And I see a world where she can do whatever she wants and be whoever she wants. But you're cutting whole departments that give her services. And so when we talk about that, we got to go back to what did we do? And I want to push us into what was pre-board, Brown versus board. And without community, there's no liberation. That ain't me. That's Audre Lorde. And so I'm kind of, somebody's like, are you a community? No, I'm just a little sis that grew up in a community where everybody jumped in to help. And I think what I want to do is say, hey, You already watching about 5 kids in your house? Let me get you trained up. Let me give you the capital in which to pay yourself. Let me get you access to people who already have grants. You talk about California. What I love about Pennsylvania, because I'm from Jersey, holla, but I do most of my work in Philadelphia. Thinking about all the things when I'm talking to educators, they're like, I didn't even know that happened. So we give out credential grants. But part of my job is to see where are the money at? Where the money reside? And so many of my grantees and the people in our ecosystem was like, I never heard that. And when you talk about access, that's what I'm saying. Because on the other side, it's like, it's there. They're not taking it. But if I don't know there's an ice cream machine back there and it works, I'm never going to eat no ice cream and get sick because lactose plays with my stomach. And you know what, Brittany? I try to bring it down for people because a lot of my colleagues, and I love, and you've had conversations with folks, I think once we get to a certain level, particularly, I say, educational-wise, we start bringing divides in our own community. That's why I'm always saying that my grandpa had a 6th-grade education. That's why I don't care what you do, what degrees you earn, because it's by the grace of everything that's going on with me that I got a doctorate, that I broke a generational curse in my family, that on my maternal side, I'm the first. And so how do we break that? But we got to have these conversations. And we also have to have them with people who have money. I love us, but who got money?
Yeah, that is so important because we do like have more of these conversations. And a lot of people have asked me, you know, why did you start the podcast? Why do you do this work? And it's like, well, the podcast, I started that because I wanted it to be for people who are social justice curious. You might not know all the pedagogy, all the words. You might not know all of those things, but you know what's right and wrong. You know what feels right and what feels wrong. You know when something is unjust. And just because you can't say, oh, that's systematic oppression, that's institutional oppression, right? That's internalized oppression. Just because you don't have the vocabulary for that, like, you know something's off. And to elevate our voices in our community and to elevate, we're out here. We have Black female researchers. We have teachers. We have principals. Like, we are out here. And we are advocating and our voices deserve to be heard. And it's like, that is at the heart of what conscious. That's why I started this. I'm like, well, who's out there? And when we share our stories, when we talk about this, when we keep that conversation going, because I hear that all the time too, I'll share like a statistic where I talk about social justice and I talk about restorative justice and exclusionary discipline practices. And
this RJ
out here expelling babies. We're expelling 2-year-olds from school. Like, do we know this?
And can I push you? Look, they're doing it. They're doing it, and it's by eye tracking. I got the data, boo. You want to make it worse?
Yeah, let's go.
This is natural, right? So whatever you follow, if I'm looking at you, I'm probably going to find something. So yes. ECE, there's a data point a couple years ago that basically was like Black boys, Black girls, and then white boys and white girls, right? And it was like 41% of them got exclusionary practices, and they tracked it to because their eye was on it. Well, I was on this. And can I push you? That's why I'm really big on people laugh at me when I'm like, yep, I was a human dreidel. They're like, what? I'm like, you know, dreidel, Jewish culture. And they're like, what? Because I have that lived experience, there's things that I know how to be and thrive. And I think we're missing that. Like, there is nothing wrong with us being inherently different. And I talk to my white brothers and sisters, my indigenous brothers and sisters, my Latinx, Latino brothers and sisters, right? Some of the things that we argue about are imploded for us to not be together. Mm-hmm. And that is the goal of the oppressor. And I'll tell people all this. People are like, well, Dr. E, sometimes I'm like, oh, she's so smart with saying oppressor, right? I'm oppressed by my debt. So I could name a couple of oppressors right now in my life. And so when we start doing that, we start talking to people who are like, oh, I just thought oppression was race. No, wait. There are moments in our lives where if people can't get clean water in a certain area in the United States, that should be all of our problem. And so I'm pushing people to say, we are not building a generation where what I just read is centered, a sound education. And so how do we do that? And I think it's pretty easy. Us, community. And I want to thank you for this podcast because I think I talk a lot and I go on a lot of things, but like places where people are held, I just want to thank you for that. We need to be held. And I just appreciate you creating the forum to do that because I can't do it and you're doing it.
I can't do half the things you do. So I'm glad you're doing what you're doing. You know, we got each other in that capacity.
We do. We got each other.
We got each other. You know, I want to ask this question because I'm so curious and I want to know what your reaction will be, but how do you reimagine education? What does the future of education look like?
The reimagination of education centers freedom. The reimagining of, that might be a keynote title. I'm gonna write that down somewhere. Reimagination of education is freedom. And I'm gonna go here. There's a lot of talk about diversity, equity, inclusion, and belonging, but we're not really talking about getting free and getting liberated. Because really, we're using DEI to get free. I like that I have rheumatoid arthritis, and that the other day when my leg fell out, a wheelchair came in the airport to help me. That's freedom. That I'm able to go to college. If I did not have wheelchair assistance, I would not be able to do half the things that I do. And so when we talk about reimagining education, I think that we have to go back to how our country was built, how other countries were built, but also think about just birth. Like, you are naturally teaching people. And I believe a good parent wants their child to be free to figure out things. That's why I love the Montessori method. Shout out to Dr. Maria Montessori. She was Italian, a white lady. And they literally was like, these kids can't learn. And you know what she gave them? Freedom. Here's the materials. Here's everything you need. And me as an adult, I'm going to just follow you around and see what piques your interest. And so when people want to talk about reimagining education, I want you to reimagine it in freedom that is steeped in data. And so where are people? Brene Brown. I love Brene Brown. Love her. She wrote a book with Tarana Burke, You Are Your Best Thing.
Yes.
Right?
I have it. It's great. It's a good book.
Dr. Brene says, the absence of love and belonging will always lead to suffering. And I think what we don't want to say in education is that the reason we need to reimagine it because people are suffering. And so I contend, right, that if we're suffering, the antidote to that is freedom. And so what does that mean? I think freedom to have the capital and access to give communities what they need. I think my dad and my mom are the best people because they lived in the community they served for over 40, 50 years. Next thing, we also have to give folks the power and the freedom of knowledge. And I think people don't understand the attacks that are going on in the world. It's the attack of knowledge, of like, how do we keep letting people know? I love the fact that I was just on the internet and saw that New York pushed their curriculum through for African-American studies. Well, how are we resisting in times where that's just not the cool thing to do? And so how do we free and let people tell their stories from Jewish ancestry? African. Do you know how many times that I did not use the word indigenous growing up and I used another word that is highly offensive? That tells me that my teachers didn't have freedom to teach me the truth. And so here's my last point. I didn't get in debt for no reason. And I don't think other people did in education. Let me teach the way I've been good, trained, taught, and then give me the professional development to make sure my skills are ever sharpened. That's what I mean about freedom. I don't understand how you can tell me how to teach. Because again, let's go back to Lila and that Aboriginal community. What I need to do, and this is what I do constantly with teachers. You got a dream of opening a school? Come on, come with me. I know a couple people with some dollars. Like, I know a couple parents who want a kid that want to go to their school, right? And that's the freedom to dream. And I want to acknowledge that particularly Black and Brown folks have not been given the opportunity to dream. And that is not our fault. That is systemic. That is oppression. And so when you talk about reimagining education, you got to center freedom. You got to center liberation. You got to center all those things. And it's not a fluff word. I want to be free. No, what does free look like? And not just economically, free should have looked like for me, I graduated from a 4-star school. Freedom should have been like, I could go to any school and not have a bill. Freedom should have been for me. And now I'm dancing on old politics. You know, GI bills didn't go to everybody.
Yeah, I do.
So if I didn't get a GI bill in my lineage and I got a whole bunch of veterans in my family, that ain't free because I can't go buy nothing. And so I want us to reimagine. And sometimes I talk about it in my work. I did a book chapter in decolonizing classroom management. And people talk about decolonization. Anything can be colonized, right?
Oh,
and I think people have colonized education. So how do we decolonize it? Center freedom. And so let's reimagine together what it looks like to be free. And some of us got to heal from the traumatic instances. Love us to death. Just because your education kind of sucked, use that as an opportunity. I don't give my students, you know what? People are always shocked when I say I was the only, at the time, enrolled African-American student in my graduate program at NYU. That ain't free. Like, that ain't free. Why is that not free? Harvard. I don't see myself. I just left this real HBCU. I'm smart. Yeah. And don't nobody look like me. The things I was reading, and I want to shout out Dr. Christina Marin. Ah, she saw me. She was a professor of color and just loved on me. And she showed me how to get free. She showed me how to get free. So when you talk about going to South Africa, I went to Ireland and London in 12 weeks. And so I want to create possibilities for people who are in these ecosystems, students, community, families, and teachers, on what does free look like for you in education, not just in money, and like, how do we curate that for everybody? It's going to take a while, but I think we could do it. Let's get free.
Let's get free. So I know we can do that. I know we can do it. And that's a beautiful thing about reimagining education, is that we get to imagine what it looks like, what it feels like, because that's how we get to where we're going, right? That's how we set our goals, our intentions. That's how you manifest. You manifest by imagining.
Manifestation.
We go get free.
And people, and
I'm also like, I'm going to live that soft life.
It's going to live that soft life.
I want it. I deserve it.
And so whoever's listening to me on the line, because I feel this in my spirit wholeheartedly, you know you're not free if you can't live the life that you feel softest in. Like, people tell me all the time, and this is a struggle for me to work part-time, manage businesses, be a co-CEO. But at the end of the day, I'm creating this soft life, not only for myself, but for others, where you're compensated well. And again, I have tons of medical issues, right? But I can stand here today and tell you that I'm free. I still got to pay Moella and all of them, but I'm free. And so how do we get that spark back for folks? I grew up on big, I have a dream, right? How many people have a dream? What's the spaces that we've allowed people? You can't reimagine. The master's tools will not dismantle the master's house. Okay? You know, Audrey, all up in my, right? And so I want to push us right now to be like, what do you need? I tell people all the time, when you go on a plane, where do you put who to put the mask on first? When I go into schools across this continental United States, people put in the air on everybody else except themselves. You wonder why we can't keep no teacher. I get up all the time and people hate me for it. You got PTO? Take it. Because the time I took PTO, it saved my life because I got an early diagnosis of rheumatoid arthritis. That's what I talk about with free. I want to have a baby, maybe. I know I'm 40. I know I'm divorced. Because people ask me, what do you want? I would like to have a baby. I'd like to be in a healthy, non-toxic relationship. I'd like to be owning a school operator owner and have real estate where people are like, I got an idea to open a school. Look, I got a space. I only charge you market value, because also people are here trying to scam a scheme. So that's all my heart is. I promise you, Brittany, that's all my heart is, for us to be free.
That is something I know I'm going to keep reflecting on even after this conversation. I feel like I just want to like talk to you for hours. I just
want to. You can. We ain't coming. I ain't letting you go.
That is what tell me. I just want to feel like, Dr. E, tell me more. I know we got to wrap this conversation up for now. You know, where can my audience find you if they're curious on connecting more with you?
Thanks for asking, because everybody's like, Dr. E, I don't know how you do all this work. So I do run my own LLC, inspiredmindscollide.com. So when you say like, I am an executive coach, right? So I do. So if you're here, like, I just kind of need to talk to somebody, right? Yeah. I do provide that. I also do professional development. I'm heading out to Colorado to facilitate a board retreat, right? And I also am a consultant for a music camp that wants to be free, right? And so just call me and let me know. I also blackwildflowersfund.org. If something has touched you right now and you're like, I want to be a part of our ecosystem, sign up for our newsletter. Get to know. If you want to go see a school, call me. I will take you to any of these schools that's led by these Black educators so you can see before you believe. And I think the last thing you can connect me to is, I'm a regular human being that go to the bathroom. So I got Facebook. I'm Erica the Queen on Instagram. And I'm telling you, my opinions are my own. And so I also want people to see that I am living a very soft life, a life that fills me, and therefore I can fill others. And so reach out to me. I'm trying. Again, if you don't hear from me, I give me 2 days and I'll get back to you. But that's what I'm out here doing. Working, giving folks what they need. And again, this is the same person who's probably going to have her cane facilitating a board retreat. But guess what? I have the freedom to do it. And the client who said, what do you need to be able to do this work? So y'all reach out to me, be my friend. I hope y'all get me lit up, right?
Absolutely. I'll link all of that in the show notes below. So if you want to connect with Dr. McDowell, it'll be all right there. Dr. I really want to thank you so much for joining me, for sharing your knowledge, for sharing your time. I am so excited to just have this episode out there, and I am so excited that I have connected with you, and we will keep connecting.
Me too. Blessings and abundance to you and the podcast. Overflow to your life. And I just want you to receive it. And thank you all. Thank you all. What a moment in time.
Thank you. What a moment in time. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Y'all, if I can be real with you, I did not want that conversation to end. That episode could have been about 10 years long. Dr. Erica McDowell, she reminds us that we are the center of freedom and community and education. We open doors, not just for students to thrive, but for educators to lead with purpose and without constraint. Her vision challenges us to do more than just reform education, but calls for us to reimagine it. If this conversation sparked something in you, I encourage you to reflect on the systems that you're a part of, the small yet powerful ways that you can be a part of creating a more just and equitable path forward. Be sure to follow Dr. E's work and to learn more about the Black Wildflowers Fund, and I'll drop all the links in the show notes. And if you found some value in this episode, which I know you did, please share with a friend, leave a rating and a review, and don't forget to subscribe to Conscious Pathways wherever you get your podcasts. And until next time, keep imagining, keep questioning, and keep walking a path towards justice. And I will see you there with more transformative conversations. Bye. If you're like me, you believe in the power of education and social justice. And what's more powerful than a good book? Today, I want to share an incredible way for you to support local independent bookstores while you indulge in your love of reading. Have you ever heard of bookshop.org? They're an amazing platform that connects readers just like us to independent booksellers all around the world. Local bookstores are essential for our communities. They foster culture, curiosity, and a lifelong love of reading. But they need our support to thrive, especially in this age of e-commerce giants. Bookshop.org is committed to helping those bookstores flourish. Every purchase you make on their site financially supports independent bookstores. That's right, every single purchase. They provide these stores with the tools they need to compete online and maintain their vibrant presence in our neighborhoods. They put their mission and public good above financial interests, giving over 80% of their profit margin to independent bookstores. That's a commitment you don't see every day. In fact, in 2020, they were recognized as the best of the world by B Labs, ranking in the top 5% of all B corporations. And guess what? It's written into their government's documents that they will never sell the company to Amazon or any major retailer. That's dedication to their mission. Plus, as a climate-neutral company, they're committed to operating sustainably. Another reason to feel good about your purchases. So if you're looking to buy a book and make a positive impact, head over to bookshop.org and use my affiliate link that's linked in my show notes below. By doing so, you'll be supporting local bookshops and helping them thrive. Let's make a difference one book at a time. Happy reading, and thank you for supporting our local bookshops.